Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. She's on vacation. The historian Margaret McMillan says history is about remembering the past, but it is also about choosing to forget. The great-granddaughter of a British prime minister, she argues that history must be handled with care. In a new book, she explores how history is used and abused, and why its most important lesson may be humility. The book is titled Dangerous Games, and Margaret McMillan joins me in the studio. Welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
We're going to invite our listeners to join our conversation later in this hour. You can call our toll-free number 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email at drshow@wamu.org. There is a remarkable anecdote in your book, which you attribute to, I think, having heard from the American writer Susan Jacoby about what she heard in a New York bar on the night of 9/11.
Oh, it's extraordinary, and it's been sticking in my mind ever since. She heard two men saying to one to the other, said, you know, this is a catastrophe. It's just like Pearl Harbor. And the second one said, well, what's Pearl Harbor, which is amazing in itself. And then the first said, oh, Pearl Harbor was when the Vietnamese bombed us and we started the Vietnamese War. And, you know, you just thought they've got about three things wrong there. But how could they not know what was this crucial moment in American history?
And besides being embarrassing to whoever their history teachers were in high school, does it matter that they got it so wrong?
Well, I think it does, because I think whether or not we all realize that we're shaped by our history, and we may forget it, and we may forget our history, we may not be interested in the history of other people's, but a lot of people do remember their histories. And so unless we know what other people are remembering, we don't have all that much chance of understanding them. And unless we know some of the great moments in the past, I think we run the risk of making the same mistakes again.
And not only not understanding other people, but maybe not understanding ourselves. You write that for many people, they get interested in history and in the past to try to make sense of what is happening in their own lives today.
Well, I think we are fascinated by ourselves, of course, and I don't think this is just a phenomenon of the baby boom generation, although it may be perhaps pronounced in that particular generation. But I think we want to know, who are we, where did we come from? And we're biological creatures. We have a beginning and we have a middle and we have an end. And I think we're interested in what happened before the beginning and what might happen after the end. And we like to see ourselves, I think understandably, as part of a bigger pattern. Difficult to think that, you know, we're born, we die, and that's all there is to us. And so I think we're interested in our own origins, our own families, our own group histories.
How about you yourself? How did you get interested in history?
Do you know, I cannot remember. I just was always fascinated by it when I was young. I think partly because, I shouldn't say it, but I'm very nosy. And the nice thing about history is you can read about people, you can do things like reading their personal letters and diaries, which you really shouldn't do in regular life, but you can do it about the past. I just found it fascinating.
Well, and of course, you grew up in a family that was involved in making history. Your great-grandfather was David Lloyd George, who was Prime Minister of Britain from 1916 to 1922. It's a very tumultuous time for the country. And your great-aunt was a member of Parliament. So you grew up in this world.
Well, I suppose I did. And my great-aunt, whom I was very close to, she was a wonderful great-aunt. I mean, she was absolutely wonderful. I mean, she'd take me to the theater. She'd take me to the House of Commons. She'd treat me like an adult, even when I was quite young. And she always talked about history, and she'd show me things at the House of Commons, and she'd say, you know, this is what happened when the House of Commons was bombed in the Second World War. This is how we rebuilt it. I mean, so it was fascinating to talk to her. And I suppose I did develop a sense of history from her.
And do you think it shaped your own attitudes toward these historical figures that you have now, as a professional yourself, written about?
Well, it probably did, but I think more in a negative way, particularly with David Lloyd George, who was my great-grandfather, because I ended up writing about the Paris Peace Conference, which he was very much involved in, of course, along with President Woodrow Wilson and others. And I was very cautious when I dealt with him, because I thought what I mustn't do is be seen to be sort of defending my family member. And so I probably treated him more critically than I would anyone else. And so it took me a long time before I could even admit that he did anything good, which he did.
And what was the reaction in your family to that book? That book was called Paris 1919, which was published to a lot of acclaim.
Well, I think my family were quite proud of it and quite surprised I'd done it, actually, because, you know, I mean, I'd been talking about it for years and suddenly this massive tome arrived on their doorsteps. And I think they were quite impressed. And they were very sweet and very supportive. And I think my mother, who'd known Lloyd George quite well as a girl, felt that I'd been quite fair about him.
The title of your new book is called Dangerous Games, The Uses and Abuses of History. Dangerous Games, what does that mean?
Well, I think history can be dangerous. It can be dangerous when it's used by, say, nationalist groups to stir up a feeling of group solidarity, whether it's around group grievances or group triumphs, and when it can be used to stigmatize others, to say they are our enemies, they've always been our enemies, you can't deal with such people. I remember I had an Albanian taxi driver the other day, and he said to me, my father told me, never trust a Serb. He said, you can't trust them, they're like that. And that clearly was his history affecting the way in which he and perhaps his members of his family looked at Serbs. So I think history's dangerous like that. I think history can be dangerous when we think it offers a very clear blueprint for the future. You know, we must behave in such and such a way because history teaches us this very clear lesson. So I think history needs to be handled with care.
Our phone lines are open. We invite our listeners to join our conversation by calling 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email at drshow@wamu.org, or you can send us a tweet on Twitter. You know, there's also this assumption, I think, by some that history is set, that you can study it and write about it and it's done and you can move on to the next era. But in fact, history is constantly being reassessed, reevaluated.
No, history is not like some great big stone sitting back there that you just have to get a shovel and uncover. I mean, history is something that is created by historians and those who write about it and think about it. And, of course, we ask different questions in each generation. We have different things we're curious about. There's a tremendous curiosity now in the history of the Middle East, for obvious reasons, because what's happening in the Middle East is very important to people both there and in the outside world. And I think in my own generation, when I grew up, when I was a young history student, there was no women's history, because people simply weren't asking those questions. And then what we got in the 60s and 70s was a women's movement, and women began to ask about the history of women. So I think every generation asks different questions and will always be interested in different things.
You talk about wars that start because history is not understood. What would be an example?
Well, you make assumptions about other people and how they're likely to react based on the history you have with them or how you understand their history. And so, for example, Hitler assumed, first of all, that France would fight for much longer than it actually did because of the experience of the First World War. And then he assumed that the British would be reasonable and make peace with him. And what I think he failed to understand was the very stubborn and sense of the British, particularly, of course, of Winston Churchill, but not just him, and also the very long British history, which made them, the British people, antipathetic, hostile to the sorts of things that Nazism stood for.
And why did the French not? Would history have taught a lesson about the response of the French?
I think what history might have shown is that the French had been very, very badly damaged by the First World War. I mean, they lost more men in proportion to their population than anyone else did. They'd been very deeply divided as a result of that war. And I think the France that went into the war in 1939 was a deeply divided France. And it was probably likely that France was not going to be able to fight that war with any enthusiasm.
We have a more current example, which is the war in Iraq, still continuing. What lessons would you draw when it comes to understanding history and thinking about the process that led to the U.S.-led invasion?
Well, I think the two things about the U.S. Invasion, along with its allies, Britain and so on, one was that I think the assumption was being made that Saddam Hussein was like Hitler, that he was a very dangerous dictator, that he had to be stopped, that he shouldn't be appeased because otherwise the consequences would be even worse. And my own feeling is that was the wrong way to look at him, that Saddam Hussein was indeed a dreadful man and a menace to his own people. But in fact, he had been contained and he was no longer a threat to the stability of the Middle East or to his neighbors. He no longer had the capacity. And so I think a much better analogy in that case would have been the containment of the Soviet Union during the Cold War. I think the second thing where history might have helped us to think or make decision makers to think about what was going to happen in Iraq was that they might have looked at the history of the Iraq people themselves. I mean, the Iraqis have a long history of not much liking outsiders telling them what to do. They have deep suspicions of the outside world wanting to get its hands on their oil. And so I think if you had known or if they had considered a bit the history of Iraq, they would not have expected the invading forces, would not have expected Iraqis to welcome them with open arms.
It seems so common sense for policymakers in any circumstance to try to look at the history of a place, to understand what the right course is to set. And I wonder why so often that does not happen.
Well, I think in a way we tend to assume that other people are like us. They'll react in the same ways. And in some ways, that's a rather nice assumption. You know, we're treating them as fellow human beings, but we shouldn't make the mistake and treat them as fellow Canadians or fellow Americans or fellow British when they're not. They have their own histories. They have been shaped by their own histories. They will have certain views on the world which are very much a product of their past. And I think we need to understand that. I mean, Robert McNamara, who just recently died, spent his life after Vietnam trying to understand what had gone wrong. And one of the things he said, one of the key things he said, was that we assumed the Vietnamese were just like us and wanted the same things and would react in the same ways. And we got it very wrong.
What is that the lesson you draw from the Vietnam experience as well?
Well, I think there was an assumption on the part first of the French and then of the Americans that it would be easy to defeat the Vietnamese, that the Vietnamese would make a calculation, a rational calculation, and say, this war is costing us too much, let's make some sort of peace. And I think that misunderstood the nature of the North Vietnamese leadership, who were prepared to fight on, who were ideologues, but who were also nationalists, and who were prepared to subject their people to tremendous suffering in the cause that they thought was important.
There are these innocent misunderstandings, like you think people will react just like you do to something. But to what degree are there calculated misunderstandings when policymakers want to pursue a course, even if history doesn't quite fit?
Well, they'll find history that does fit. You know, history is terribly useful because you can find almost any lesson you want. So, you know, you can go back to the Romans, you can go back to the Greeks, you can go back to the Egyptians, and you can find the lesson you want. And you saw that with Iraq. I mean, the lesson that people were taking who were making policy from history was the lesson of the 1930s, that you had to deal with Saddam right now. And so I think you can find whatever you want. And I think policymakers tend to find history useful because it seems, as you said earlier on, so settled.
We're talking with Margaret McMillan about her new book. It's called Dangerous Games. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll go to the phones and take your calls. We'll read your questions from emails. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We're talking about Dangerous Games, The Uses and Abuses of History. That's a new book by Margaret McMillan, the best-selling author. Her previous books have included Paris 1919 and Nixon and Mao. Let's go to our first caller. We'll talk to Joanne, who's calling us from Berlin. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, hello. Hello, hello. I just have one quick comment. I am a Canadian living in Germany now since 1993, and when I came here almost 16 years ago, I didn't know anything about Germany. And I got here, I had, you know, heard all the cliches, seen all the films and all the documentaries and so on, and I got here and I was really amazed at the amount of and the desire of analysis to try to understand what happened in the 30s. In this country, how you know, very intelligent people could actually elect Nazis, and how this whole thing happened. And still today, there is not one day, if you don't zap around on your, you know, on your TV, there is not a single day where there isn't a documentary trying to understand what happened, bringing some kind of historical context. And this is, to me, as a foreigner living here, a very amazing thing.
All right, Joanne, thank you so much for your call. What an interesting approach. Is it valuable for Germans to try to study this period?
I think it is, because I think one of the great puzzles of modern history is how that sophisticated and cultivated nation fell into the hands of that ghastly gang and committed such atrocities. And I think for the Germans not to deal with their history would be for them not to try and understand themselves in the present. I mean, I think the danger, if you sweep all that stuff under the carpet, it's still there. And I think Germany actually has done a tremendous amount to try and explore its own history, to try and deal with the very, very dark side of German history. And that, I think, is to its credit. And I think it's one of the reasons why Germany is such a democratic state today.
And this is, of course, a big topic, but why do you think that happened?
Well, I think it happened for a couple of reasons. I think it happened partly because the victors wanted it to happen. I mean, West Germany in particular, during the Cold War, got a lot of pressure from outside to deal with the issues, the Holocaust, the range of crimes that Nazi troops and Nazis had committed across Europe. And so I think there was pressure, but I think there also was tremendous pressure from within Germany. I mean, Germany, we forget, had strong liberal traditions as well as Nazi traditions, and I think there were Germans themselves who were prepared to confront the past.
And going back another step, what in Germany's history accounts for the fact of the rise of the Nazis?
Well, it's a terrific question, and it's one that keeps on being asked. I mean, there are those who would say that Germany was a very new state and very insecure, and therefore likely to fall into the hands of demagogues who preyed on those insecurities. There was within Germany a strand, but only a strand of sort of vaunting the German race of a sort of Volkisch, they called it, mentality. There was also a sense that Germany was vulnerable, surrounded by enemies. And then, of course, you got the Depression, which really shook a lot of countries, even strong democracies like the United States, Canada, and Great Britain.
And Germany's approach to dealing with its history after the war ended is different from the approach that Japan took.
Japan has not, I think, explored its own history as much as Germany has, although I think Japan sometimes gets an unfair rap on this. I think the Chinese use this as a bludgeon with which to hit the Japanese for various reasons. And the Chinese, quite frankly, have not explored some of the dark bits of their own history. I mean, we don't get much in China about the Maoist period and the many crimes committed by Mao and the atrocities and the huge numbers of dead. The Japanese perhaps have not done as much as the Germans, but I think they have gone some way.
Dealing with painful periods of the past can be hard for a country. What are the consequences if that doesn't happen, if it's ignored, if it's brushed under the rug?
Well, I think the danger is that the attitudes and the assumptions which fueled those dark patches in the past may still be there and will not be brought out into the daylight and not challenged. I mean, Italy really has not looked at its fascist past. And I think you're seeing that this is a problem in Italy today. I mean, there are those who say, well, there's nothing wrong with Mussolini. He did lots of good, because they don't know the whole story. And I think that is a danger if you don't explore your own past.
Let's go to Interlaken, New York, and talk to Tondo. You're on the air.
Okay. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Oh, terrific. Oh, initially, I was under the impression that the lady might be related to a British statesman by the name of Harold Macmillan, but your screener there informed me that that's not the case. But after the battle against the Nazi eruption on planet Earth, a lot of people went to war to fight and stop it. But a very curious thing happened, and this goes to the point where people forget their history so easily. Immediately after the cessation of hostilities at the end of Second World War, most of the European economic powers started moving along the impulse of forgetting that the very idea of freedom that they had mobilized against Hitler, they were denying it to their colonial peoples, whether it was the French in Algeria or the French in Vietnam or the English themselves.